Good afternoon. My part of this presentation of making sense of the DNA backlog is to share with you the LAPD experience, or what I also like to call it, or what happens when your backlog increases by 1,700% overnight. Before I get started on this, I do want to thank NIJ for the opportunity to share this with you, and I also want to thank the Marriott Hotel, because for all of you that may have issues with your budget and office supplies, even leaving pens around and notepads, it's going to make our office supply budget go that just a little bit further. So if you haven't caught on to that, grab them and take them back on. So I want to do a little background on the city of Los Angeles. Obviously located in the southern portion of Southern California, we have a officially counted population of about 4.1 million. I anticipate it's probably a little bit higher than that. We cover 468 square miles. There's a potential for a lot of crime within that area with that many people. The interesting thing is that our crime rate is actually the lowest it's been since the 1960s. And our request rate and our number of submissions has never been higher. So it kind of shows me that what we do as a community is becoming more important, and we're being involved more and more in the investigation of crimes. A little bit on our laboratory. Our total staff right now is 171 people. That consists of 117 criminalists and other analysts, plus 54 support. And I consider support on both sides of the analysts. The supervisors and managers are support to the criminalists and the analysts, along with clerical and whatever technical support we have below them. Out of that 171 staff, as of today, 60 are in our biology or serology DNA unit. So I start off with our definition of a backlog. Historically, and in almost all of our units still, it's just a request for analysis for which a report has not yet been issued. I figure as soon as a report is made, or a request is made of our laboratory, it goes into the backlog, because who knows when it's going to get done. Some are done the same day, some may be sitting a year or more before it happens. And that's how we've always considered our backlog of cases that we had to work. And a lot is based on the decisions that are made on the backlog number. To give you an idea of just backlog in general across the lab, the one thing I do want to point out is the serology DNA number does not include the increase of the sexual assault cases, which is the main crux to this talk. But if you scan down those numbers, I mean, here we are talking about mainly DNA backlogs. There's a number there that jumps out pretty significantly of another unit that maybe could use a little bit of attention in dealing with their backlog, and that's our firearms analysis unit at 3,388 cases. I was at a meeting not too while back when we were talking about resources, and our assistant laboratory director that manages the firearms unit walked out of that meeting a little bit frustrated, going, God, doesn't anybody care if anybody gets shot in this city? Because the resources are all going to DNA, and they obviously have a need too. My answer to her is, unfortunately, right now, no, they don't. They want to know about the DNA. Now, if they were shot in association with a rape, there's a good chance that that firearms work might get done on that. But the reality is we're dealing with DNA and biological evidence. This reminds me, I was going to give a disclaimer at the beginning regarding the numbers that is up here. I mean, I'm talking in broad terms. Every number I give up there is accurate at some point in time. But if you try and do the math to, you know, if you remember a number before and say that doesn't add up, that's the way this works. They change constantly. It was a education process for our politicians. It sometimes took, sometimes didn't, wondering why are we giving them all these different numbers when they think they're asking the same question. Well, they ask it today, it's going to be different than yesterday or the week before. So it's just the reality of the process we're dealing with. So the crux to this mainly is the rape kit evidence. We have a combined kit in the county of Los Angeles. Both the city, Los Angeles Police Department, and the Sheriff's Department uses the same kit. A lot of the collection sites overlap, so it makes life easier for them. But obviously the LAPD, ones that occur in the city of Los Angeles, come to us. Ones that occur everywhere else in the county goes to the county lab. Our storage conditions is we have, I think it's 9 permanently built-in freezers that range anywhere from 15 by 30 up to about 60 by 30 that are in different locations. Most of them in one, but there's a couple different locations. We also have an additional, I think it's 7 or 8 freezer trucks that are leased. We store at this point every piece of biological evidence that comes into the possession of the laboratory in the freezer. and we've been doing that since about 2002. So the pictures that I have here, and some you'll see later, are pulled directly out of the media because they've come in and everybody wants to take a picture of all the unanalyzed rape kits that are in all of our freezers. Well, they're shooting everything, obviously, not just the rape kits, but it makes for a good graphic for them. So we had a change in our serology DNA backlog definition. This was a policy change or a political change. We talked a little bit about it at the end of the last session, but our new definition when it comes to rape cases is all sexual assault kits that are collected by the department for which a final report has not yet been issued. The detectives no longer have any discretion as to whether or not they request a kit to be made. They prioritize them for us, so we know what the important ones are, the ones that require a faster turnaround time is, but they no longer make requests. Every kit that exists in our backlog, every kit that is collected within the city limits will become part of our backlog. The only exception to that, and this is still up in the air, are kits that are collected where it's determined not to be associated with a crime. We're arguing the fact that if we can't load it into CODIS, why do we want to analyze it? That one has yet to be completely decided, but that's currently what we're standing by. So the serology DNA backlog, again, this is about 2 years ago, but prior to a rape kit backlog definition change, we counted a backlog of 444 cases. That was both the rape kits and other biological evidence analysis that was requested by the detectives. After the rape kit analysis backlog definition changed, overnight we are sitting at about 7,500 or about a 1,700% increase. I hope I did the math right, but the numbers sound really scary. I was going to say good, but it was an amazing change, and we had to give some serious thought to how we were going to deal with this significant change in our backlog. So why did the backlog definition change? Victim advocates groups got involved. Among those primarily were the Santa Monica Rape Treatment Center, or Gail of Arbenol, very, very strong in our city, very influential when it comes to this type of both collection and analysis. The Human Rights Watch got involved. I'll be talking a little bit more about them. The Hollywood chapter of NOW was the most recent addition to this group. Now they're very, very involved, the National Association for Women. Obviously, the media jumped in. That's how the victim advocates get their point across or were able to get it across, and politicians. This is not necessarily in any order because they kept, it would come up in a variety of different ways. The Human Rights Watch in March 2009 came out with a report they called Testing Justice, the Rape Kit Backlog in Los Angeles City and County. Very comprehensive report. They were working on it for easily more than a year. We became very well acquainted with many of the members associated, as did the LA County Sheriff's Department. And then they submitted this significant report. It's very, very long, deals with the issue. One of the things that I want to point out, we had a member of the Human Rights Watch speak recently at California Association of Crime Laboratory Directors meeting, and the point that they wanted to make very clear is they're just starting in Los Angeles. She looked around the room at all the different lab directors from California and said, "We will be coming to your lab next." I anticipate they will be going nationwide at some point because this is a significant issue to them. So be prepared. They are, as a rule, very fair about what they do, and we had a pretty good working relationship with them. But one of the things, don't you hate slides that just have huge amounts of writing on it? Don't worry about it. The point I wanted to make is in some respects, they really get it. They weren't just attacking the lab for not getting the work done. They were very concerned about the fact that this is a combined issue. I'm going to read a couple parts of it. For rape victims to have access to justice, policymakers and law enforcement officials in Los Angeles County will need to test every booked rape kit, but their responsibility doesn't end there. Law enforcement in collaboration with rape treatment providers with the support of elected officials will need to create systems to ensure that every reported rape case is thoroughly investigated and, when appropriate, leads to the arrest of those responsible. They get that it's a whole system problem, and the crime lab is just one little piece of it. The remedy will require a comprehensive plan that's made known to the public, compliance with existing laws, and swift and efficient action. This is a necessary part of a core governmental obligation to protect victims of sexual violence and promote public safety. The media obviously also gets involved a lot locally. They started off with a number of articles saying about how far we were behind in processing the cases. I love this one, LAPD rape kit debacle continues. But then it started shifting a little bit and saying that, okay, we're going to clear them all by 2010. That was, I think, a really good projection until kind of the economy fell out of things and the money that's going to be available to do it may or may not be there. We'll see. But we were shooting to have the backlog eliminated by mid-2010. And then finally, a solution for LAPD's rape kit backlog announced. We have been working our way through this, and they don't always just write nasty articles about us, so occasionally there are good things. The politicians, the head of our public safety committee, City Councilman Jack Weiss, was a strong proponent of this. He goes back in his efforts to get us resources many, many, many years, long before Human Rights Watch came into play, long before the Santa Monica Rape Treatment Center. And in fact, over the last couple of years, he's given us $350,000 out of his private office account or discretionary fund or whatever the council members have to work on some of the rape kits. Our city controller, Laura Chick, also audited the whole issue and came up with a not-so-flattering report. Chick calls for the city to end rape kit backlog once and for all. Again, an awful lot of it points at the laboratory, but she was pretty pointed her finger a lot at both the department as a whole and the city as a whole for not providing the support, the council for not providing the support in the past. I think one of the interesting things about this is because, you know, we all tend to take things personally, and they say nasty things about a job we should be doing and we haven't done it. The day after her report came out, I was sitting in the airport getting ready to fly up to Sacramento, and I got a call from her on my cell phone. And we'd met in the past, but I had no clue how she got my cell phone number, but she did. Basically, not apologizing, but saying, I hope you're not taking this personally. I really want to help you out. And it was just nice having her understand that. So why weren't the cases requested originally? Well, the detective mindset regarding sexual assault investigations changed over the years. I mean, I've been in talking about the dinosaurs. I mean, I was doing serology work back in the early 80s, late 70s. And at that point, no hospital wanted to take a rape victim. They would sit in the emergency room for hours on end waiting to be have their evidence collected. It was a nightmare. Detectives didn't want to handle it. It was relegated to a small part of the department. Obviously, things have changed. The SART programs are the same programs. The evidence being collected is significantly better than it used to be. And the detectives are coming around to understanding that this is an important case that needs to be investigated. When the California Cold Hit Program came out, which was in about 2001, 2002, and I met with a bunch of detectives at that point, some of the less enlightened ones said, well, if you get hits, we're going to have to do more work. You know, what are you doing this for? Obviously, that's changing somewhat, but this explains why they weren't requesting them. They also had the mindset regarding comparison versus, answering it. People did not, well, prior to CODIS becoming the level it is now, we would discourage a request to be made for a kit unless they had a suspect in custody, unless we had something to compare it to, because it was still more of a prosecutorial tool or a confirming what they already knew, that now it's a investigative tool. Detectives would self-triage the cases. They wouldn't make a request because they knew we had limited resources and they wanted to make sure that their really important one we'd get around to. So they just didn't request a lot of them. And obviously our laboratory resources, even if they did request them at the time, we couldn't have done the analysis. So in late December of 2008, the part of our department that we were moved to, which was the Detective Bureau, decided they wanted to know exactly how many kits were in the freezers. Up to that point, we were calculating them by a means that left a lot to be desired. So the chief of detectives said, we're going to find out exactly how many kits are in the freezer. And he ended up getting 50 detectives over about a two-week period. They spent in the neighborhood of about 2,000 hours with parkas on and notepads looking at every item of evidence in those dozen plus freezers that we have to determine how many rape kits or sexual assault kits are in the freezer. What they found was there was 11,077 rape kits that were currently in the freezer. 48% of them had already been analyzed. I thought that was really good. 52% had not been analyzed. So now we had a firm number. That 7,000 plus was calculated. We now know that we had just under 5,200 kits that actually had not been analyzed. Of the 5,200 that were not analyzed, you can see how they broke down. One of the reasons that some of them were analyzed, 23% of them were cleared by arrest. Why request the analysis if it's already been determined who did the crime? 36% were cleared other, or most of those are DA rejects. They'd taken file, you know, take them to file, DA would reject them. Why do the analysis at that point? Investigation continued was a big chunk, and then 770 were not eligible for CODIS upload, which was great because we immediately dropped our backlog by that 770. Let's look at the investigation continued. We had 70% of were known suspects that they were still looking for, they were doing the investigation on. But the important one is this middle one, 29% stranger crimes. We had, I believe it was three detectives who were doing nothing but looking up those 5,000 plus cases to find out what the status of them. And they were saying out of these 402, they're looking at this going, why didn't the detective request it? So that really was a situation where the detective fell down on the ball. So really from our standpoint, I think we really kind of dropped the ball on only 402 out of the 5,000 plus. Those are the ones where we should have been being hammered for because those should have been collected. But there are reasons to do those other ones. Maybe a DA reject wouldn't be a DA reject if we analyzed it, uploaded it, and found it hit to another case. I mean, there's a lot of reasons out there to analyze kits that we aren't currently doing it. So how can the laboratory respond to a big change in the backlog definition? You know, the first thing is get defensive. It's not our fault. You know, we only did what we were being asked for. You know, go away. Don't bother us with this sort of stuff. The next thing is argue the necessity of the case. Well, why do all of them? You don't need to. It isn't needed for investigation. You know, we can come up with a lot of reasons why we don't want to do this work. Finally, you might want to embrace the opportunity, and I'll get into how that's worked for us. I went through all three of those. I mean, I think that my position on analyzing these kits has changed significantly over the last 2 to 3 years because I've become educated on what all is involved in the cases and what can come out of it. So backlog versus resources, how do you determine your resource needs within it? You know, we now have a major difference in the backlog, but let's take a look at it. There's different ways of doing it. We used to always do it based on the request for work. You knew approximately how many requests you had coming into the laboratory. If you weren't getting them done, you'd go to the city council or whoever it was, ask for more resources based on what you were being asked to do. That's how we always did it before. You could do it based on what you think you'll get in the budget. I mean, there are times where we knew that the city budget was going to be poor, so we didn't ask for a lot, even though we needed it. The problem with that is when the budget gets good again, they say, well, why didn't you ask for it before? If you didn't ask for it before, you don't really need it now, so I'm not going to give it to you. So you always ask for it. Finally, you do it based on potential workload. Had we been asking for resources in the past when the policy changed and our backlog went from 444 up to 7,000 plus, you know, maybe we would have said, our potential backlog or our potential workload is 7,000 cases, and maybe 10 years ago we would have started asking for more resources based on that. Probably wouldn't have gone anywhere, but who knows. So finally, you know we got to do it. We've got these kits. We have to get it analyzed. So I had to develop a backlog elimination plan. I'll go through the overview of it real quick and then go into specifics. First, identify the workload. Backlog is any case coming in that hasn't been analyzed. So you've got to take into account your new, including your new cases. Determine your capacity, how many you can get out internally and externally. We did a lot of outsourcing, by the way. We do DNA in-house, but we do a lot of outsourcing. Identify the funding that's available for it. Identify other resource needs, such as we rely on our property division to move the evidence around. We rely on detectives to do what they're supposed to do. Our success is based on a lot of other areas, and they're prepared to constantly revise the plan. So when we're talking about backlog, ours was determined by the hand count that the detectives did. However, we've got new cases coming in all the time. That's going to change depending on the crime rate trends, the number of cases that are being reported. As we heard earlier, I mean, as we know, many of them are not reported. Well, what if all of a sudden, because we're getting more hits and we're doing the work, everybody starts reporting or more people start reporting? That's going to change our new cases, which is going to throw off the plan. Technology changes. Sometimes we'll get a new technology that allows us to analyze kits out to a week later or something. That's going to change the number of cases coming in. And then obviously political changes will change the amount of cases that you have. So just give you an idea of what our historical average, if we were basing it on the requests that we receive for analysis, You can see that from 2004 through roughly 2006, it stays constant, and then it starts rising. So basically, we've seen a 63% increase in requests for analysis in 5 years. Ignore the fact that we're being told now to do all the kits, requested or not. Just our requests went up that much. So if you're planning on figuring out how or the resources you need, you have to take that into consideration. You got to determine the capacity, internal. You have to look at the individuals, how much they can do. Look at average product unit productivity levels and figure out how many cases you can get out the door. The number of analysts you have may or may not, or may change. As you'll see, ours changed significantly. Technology changes. They become more efficient, usually. You can get more cases out the door. Or a new technology comes along, and all of a sudden, everybody's less efficient. You know, all these things have to be considered and taken into effect. Or you throw a lot of disclaimers into your plan so they know that it's not necessarily going to be accurate. Like I mentioned, we do a lot of outsourcing. The capacity of the different contract laboratories we use are changing constantly depending on other contracts they have, what else is happening in the rest of the country. So looking at internal staff capacity, in fiscal years 07-08, we received 15 new positions for the unit alone. In fiscal year 08-09, we received 16 more positions. This is all coming in because of, In the next fiscal year, which is amazing considering what the whole fiscal situation is, we're supposed to get 20 more criminalists and a lab tech. So in the city of Los Angeles, next fiscal year, there's only two job classes that are being allowed to hire, criminalists associated or staff associated with DNA and police officers. That's throughout the whole city. Laboratory growth due to the rape kit, we went from 140 in 2007 to 171. We're going to go to 192 people in the lab next year. In serology DNA unit, we've gone from 28 to 81 in the last 5 years. Significant growth in internal capacity. Funding for this project, backlog of elimination, we will have received about $5 million in general funds. Federal grants, about $2 million. Thank you, NIJ. Donations, which is an interesting funding source when it comes to police work. So far, we've had about $1 million, and it's continuing to come in. The donations have come from the Los Angeles Police Foundation, Hollywood Now is out there, and other civic groups. Regarding the Police Foundation, they have a website up, and circled up there is a button that says Donate Now. So if somebody's on their website, they receive donations from individuals, you know, $20, $30, $40, up to large groups that have given us, one group has given us $500,000 towards eliminate this one topic, elimination of our backlog sexual assault cases. I mean, that goes to embracing the opportunities. We could continue to argue you this forever, but we've received a lot of resources because of the bad press that this situation has received. I'm sure the city of LA is any different than most of your jurisdictions. The reality is they work on crisis, and this was a crisis that became a political issue, and we are embracing it for everything we can to grow the laboratory to meet the needs. Identifying other resource needs, we rely on a variety of both internal and external groups. You need a grant coordinator to handle all the grants coming in. Contracts, we're dealing with four companies right now, and the contracts change on a regular basis. And I know none of you have problems with your IT group. You get always what you want right away. Yeah, they're interesting. They have held us up a couple of times. Reconsider, reevaluate, revise the plan constantly. Workload changes, capacity changes, funding can increase or decrease. It has gone up, it's gone down, they find more money, they tell us to increase our amount. Next day they figure, oops, we didn't mean that, it's less. The number is all over the board. So you have to set up a way of dealing with every change that comes along. Another little bit too much number, but this is just an example of a portion of the spreadsheet that I used to both predict when we'd get done if we don't have a laser pointer. But if you look up there, you start, the left-hand column is, we know where we started at a certain point in time. We know how much money we had, we know what our backlog was, and you work your way down. By adding in the number of new cases that you estimate will come in the door each month, the amount of money that's going to be used on other types of contracting, the amount of kits that you expect to send out, all of these are estimations at the beginning of this program. you can figure out then approximately how long it'll take given the cost. Any of those factors can be changed, and it'll adjust the top and under. You know when you're going to run out of money by if you insert higher numbers of kits that are going out the door. You know roughly when the backlog is going to be eliminated. On our current plan, our current spending, we're looking to be done with the backlog of the 4,000-plus kits by the end of the next fiscal year. But it's been a great tool for both predicting and then tracking whether or not you're keeping up with your plan. Current status, we have a backlog of 4,786 kits. Since we started dealing with it, outsourcing, which was only last September, October, we've outsourced almost 2,700 kits. This is where the math doesn't work, if you remember some of the other numbers, because our backlog, you know, you'd think if you've got a fixed point in time and you've counted every kit that's in there, that number should stay the same, go down as you get them done. They find more. I mean, it was an interesting process. Like I mentioned, you have to take into account the new rape kits that are coming in the door. So far in 2009, we've been averaging about 26 per week. That's the number of sexual assault kits that are collected associated with crimes in the city of Los Angeles. Then the next question is, we got this a lot. God, you're asking for all these people to eliminate your backlog. When the backlog is gone, what are you going to do with them? Well, yeah, I can think of something. We might use them for a quicker turnaround, more cold cases completed. Maybe we can find more of our detectives that committed crimes 20 years ago. For those of you who have heard about that case. Obviously, we're going to be analyzing every new sexual assault case that comes in the door, and we want to do it without outsourcing. We've been outsourcing DNA now for 21, 22 years, and we'd really like to be able to do them in-house. Obviously, we also want to move on to doing more property crimes. We were involved in the NIJ program on that, on the burglaries and DNA. Amazingly effective tool when you're dealing with property crimes like that. Finally, I find it interesting that, now keep in mind, all of our caseload is request-driven, except for the sexual assault kits. So everything, we know what our backlog is when it comes to all of the rest of them, because they're the requests that we have received for analysis. But what if suddenly somebody comes along like they've asked, what about all the rest of this biological evidence you have in your freezers associated with homicide? Shouldn't that all be analyzed too? Well, they recently went through and determined that right now there's 42,927 items that are frozen storage that are associated with homicide evidence. We all know all of that is not probative or informative when it comes to the investigation of a crime, but you never know when somebody's going to come along and say, do it anyway. And boy, look at the resources we can get out of that if they force us to consider doing all of the homicide evidence. And that's it. Thank you very much.